hearing on House Bill 2369. Who's handling 2369? All right. It's a good thing you got your copy when you did. As I said, the chairman will be here in a few minutes, caught in traffic. I hope not that traffic jam in Portland that everybody battled.
He doesn't come that way.
Okay, good news.
I mean, he's Beaverton. He comes down 217.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's not Senate bill. It's a House bill.
Yeah. Not
and there is a good reason for it. It's a tax bill, so can't start in the Senate, of course.
Yes.
House Bill 2369 is the House bill that extends the sunset that is in statutes today on the 911 tax. 911 emergency tax is a 75 cents per month per circuit, and the per circuit definition was put in statutes in 1995, and that definition includes both landlines and cellular phones as well. I included in your packet a chart of how 911 revenue have increased through the time since 1981-82 fiscal year. This revenue at this time, for the 05-06 fiscal year, we saw about $3599 or $36 million per year. There was a number of bills discussed in front of the House Revenue Committee before it came to you. Some of it was about the elimination of the tax. Some other variation was with the indexing to inflation and so on. But this bill that is in front of you comes from two committees, the Joint Committee on Emergency and then the House Revenue Committee, and then passed the House, and it is in front of you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Monroe.
Hey, Mazen, does this change the tax in any way, or does it just extend the sunset?
Senator Monroe, it only extends the sunset to 2014.
Good. Okay. Thank you. I'm ready to go.
Christina. Oh, we're not allowed to move it.
We're not allowed to move it. Okay.
Darn it. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires on behalf of the Oregon APCO NENA, which is the professional organization that represents the PSAP managers, public safety, primary public safety answering points in the state of Oregon. I'll be very brief with my testimony. As Mazen has aptly described, this bill comes to you with the support of the Joint Emergency Preparedness Committee and the House Revenue Committee. The bill does, in fact, only extend a 75-cent per line tax for three legislative bienniums. There was some discussion of doing some other things. I think there's broad-based support from not only my organization, League of Oregon Cities, Special Districts Association, Association of Oregon Counties, and there doesn't appear to be any objection to extension of the tax. There's a lot of objection to elimination of the sunset, and that is not what this bill does today. I'd be happy to provide you with a more detailed explanation of this tax if you'd be interested. If not, everybody knows that it's 75 cents per line, capable of accessing 911. That my testimony includes several pie charts of how the money is distributed, and Mazen has already covered that. So without being redundant and repetitive, I would just urge the committee's support and passage of the legislation as is.
Christina, Mr. Chairman, when you look at the revenue increases and then you look at our needs to update the system and everything, how do we look in there? Because I mean, I'm sure there's a point in which we're going to say, okay, this can be diminished, this can be reduced or eliminated. Right now we do have a building system, improving system. How would you describe where we are in relationship to revenue?
Senator George, members of the committee, I would describe Oregon as a leader in the 911 system nationwide. We were one of the first states to complete enhanced 911. a lot of the local governments would probably argue for additional funds because as more people switch, as more lines are capable of accessing 911, the call volume also increases. And there is some concern from some of the local governments that call volume is increasing and that requires more staff. And as you know, that this tax only funds about 20% on average statewide of locals' budgets. So there are a lot of technology enhancements that are in play and that we have completed. Who knows what the future will hold. At this point, we're all supportive of just maintaining the tax as is.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. And it just may be my ignorance on this, but, you know, a few times I picked up the phone, cell phone, and said, hey, we got somebody out here driving erratically and so on and so forth. There seems to be just a little bit of annoyance with that phone call. Is there any talk about having that reporting, 411, 511, whatever it would be, type thing incorporated where... Or what is everyone recommending right now?
Senator George, members of the committee, I think industry and local government have always supported the 911 tax to be dedicated solely for emergency 911 call taking. It's been one of the taxes that's been pure. We've always fended off attempts to add additional taxes on for other purposes or to take existing dollars and funnel those to things that may well be worthy causes but are not true 911 call emergencies.
Other questions?
We're just in public hearing.
Thank you.
Senator
Starr.
From the chart that Monson gave us and then the forecast, looks like this is on a pretty steep increase curve as far as amount of money that this tax is raising. Can you just explain to me the justification for going out to 2014 for the sunset and maybe not moving that up a little bit closer? I mean, we're raising a whole chunk of dough here. I mean, and the curve is steep. I mean, let's talk a little bit about why 2014, maybe not some other date.
Senator Starr, members of the committee, typically when the 911 tax is set to expire, the governor's budget and bill that is put in, that's what this bill is extends the tax for 3 bienniums. I think that's typically how it's done. Sometimes people express interest in eliminating the sunset or extending it out longer. Our position is that you always have the ability to come back in any legislative session and reduce or increase or eliminate. It's just a 3-session biennium placeholder, and that's the justification for it. There was a lot of, I would describe, politics going on the other side of the building about completely eliminating the sunset, so a 3-session biennium was authorized ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, please. Any comment on the amount of money that this tax raises and the uses for that? I mean, this is a lot of dough, really. I mean, it's mm-hmm. that's projected to come in from this tax. And looking at the historical numbers, you know, it's significantly greater amount than historical. Is the 75 cents still justified? Does it make sense to lower that tax to another number? Is the need that great for these additional dollars?
Senator Starr, members of the committee, I think there is absolute justification for maintaining the 75-cent revenue, 75-cent tax on this very important revenue stream for local governments. Local governments would and do argue that the tax only pays for about 20% of, on average, their costs. So they're subsidizing at the local level 80% of that cost. While they're getting more revenue, and it would be a very complicated calculation for me to go to every PSAP and get the increased call volume and the increased revenue, but I can tell you that in general, local governments, and if League of Oregon Cities were here or Association of Oregon Counties were here, they would probably strongly argue that they just don't have enough money to operate their call centers and are continually having to fund additional at the local level, that the tax doesn't fund everything and it's not intended to fund everything. But there is strong justification for maintaining the 75-cent charge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hussein, and we've talked about this before. Maybe we could hold the bill over and get this, but is the call volume or the increase commensurate with, just on Senator Starr's point, the increase in revenue? I guess that's the ultimate $64,000 question. Is the call volume an increase about the same in terms of the revenue spikes that we've got with the advent of cell phones.
Senator Deckert, members of the committee, I do recall that information being requested and provided by for your Washington County 911, and I just don't have those papers with me, but I recall that it was absolutely justified in Washington County when we looked at call volume versus revenue. Absolutely. I didn't do the breakdown. I just remember specifically when we were on the House side having been requested to provide that information for Washington County in anticipation of the Senate. So.
And I just didn't get it in this form, so that would probably be helpful for, I think, all of us to see, and not just one county, but some sort of statewide assessment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd be happy to work with Office of Emergency Management and our PSAPs to provide you with that information if it would make you more comfortable.
Senator George.
This may be anecdotal, but does anyone track the fact that today, because, you know, all of us are packing the cell phones, that you get an immediate fire alarm, you get immediate response to accident, and how many lives have been saved or how much property has been saved because of the fact that we have a 911 system that activates the responders immediately? I think that would be something to look at, you know, because people are going to be coming back saying, what about the numbers? It seems to be growing rapidly. But I think there is such a value for the fact that we get immediate responses out there. Any comments on that?
Mr. Chair, Senator George, I don't have any of that data. Okay. I do have some data for the three counties, Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington County, on call volume and what's coming in, and is it an MVA or what types of calls, property crime, drunk drive, all of those. I could get you some statistics from the tri-county area on what those are. If the committee would be interested, I'd be happy to provide that information.
I think we're fine, right, Mr. Chairman? I'm going to just speak for myself here. I think we're fine now, but I think that would be something to look at because I believe that that's happening. I've had things in which I saw it happen. I pick up the phone and I dial 911. They'd already received calls. That was unheard of 25 years ago. That would never have happened. It would have been minutes or even, you know, hours before a response came in on some of those events, particularly in rural areas. I think it's so critical that we have that where you're removed from where everyone is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Okay.
You know, I'm ready to move on this bill. The information that we've asked for could be provided before it comes up on the floor, but, you know, whatever you want to do. I think extending this sunset is absolutely critical, and you know, sooner or later we're going to do it, so why not now?
Chair.
Massive.
Just to be able to add some information to this, the increase in revenue has been climbing so quickly because of the phenomenon of the cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
And because we have multiple phone lines in each family now rather than only one it used to be, so the revenue just started climbing with very strong trend. Now, along with that, you would expect the amount of reporting to also increase from each one line to everybody with a cell phone that sees something on the line would probably be calling. So that the volume would maybe not one-to-one relationship, but the phenomenon of the cell phone has been very prominent with this tax.
Yeah. And you're right, it's important to see both sides. There were traffic jams throughout the metropolitan area this morning. I'm sure the phone calls to the 911 centers were commensurate with the little accidents that people have to stop and watch forever. anyone else on House Bill 2369? Yes. Casina, you are welcome to stay or whatever your pleasure is.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, former State Representative Jeff Krupp, also a fire board member of Sublimity Fire District, and we depend very heavily on a local, small, rural 911 call center. And this tax is a big piece of our being able to retain that center's operational capability. And I got to tell you right now, having that call center out there in the rural areas saves people's lives all the time, because We know, the local 911 dispatchers know when someone calls in, they're describing, the 911 dispatcher will ask them, where are you? They don't know where they are necessarily, especially if they're driving through the area, say on their way up to Detroit Lake or something. And the 911 dispatcher locally knows the geographic area and can figure out where their assets are needed and resources. That's what these little 911 call centers do, and this tax has been a big part of us being able to retain ours, and I think that's a story that you could probably hear repeated all across the state. We're very much in favor. As a legislator, I've worked with Hasina and many of you to fight these battles to keep the 911 tax in place, and it's essential for what we do in the rural areas.
Such a tax and spender.
It's on tape now.
Senator George.
Oh, I was just going to say, Jeff and I have a reputation being extremely conservative, but if you give us a product for our tax money, we'll be there to support it.
Senator Monroe, well, actually, I won't usually jump right in on that.
Senator George is already on board with me on
that. Thank you very much. Anyone else on House Bill 2369? Let's close the public hearing. We'll just move.
Sure.
Let's just move the bill. Open a work session on save some time in the cities and counties coming up with information. Open a work session on House Bill 2369.
Mr. Chairman, move House Bill 2369 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 2369 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Just, I don't want to prolong this, but my previous life as a Hillsborough City Councilor, I had the opportunity to serve on the WACA, Washington County Consolidated Communications Agency Budget Committee. Great organization, great operation, absolutely needs continued state support, so I'm pleased to support this bill.
Great.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, and with especially rural counties losing some of their forest receipts and having budgetary crisis, I could see where they might lose their 911 programs entirely if they didn't have this funding continuing.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. You know, in orientation, we see this chart, and it always gets at least my attention in terms of the growth in revenue, but the more you learn about the need in cities and counties and the revenue sharing, I think it explains that this revenue is going to use, as Jeff Krupp pointed out, that is very needed from urban areas to areas like Sublimity. Did you make a motion?
Mm-hmm.
Any objections to that motion? So ordered. Would you like to carry, Senator George?
Okay.
Senator George will carry the bill. Thank you, Mazin.
You get all the easy ones.
I do.
Open a public hearing on House Bill 2294.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming up, I do have to leave at 9:45. I have a very important press conference.
Okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me. I meant to do that. I need to do Bates and Buckley's bill. Thank you. I meant to do that. Close public hearing on House Bill 2294. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2641. Steve, good catch, Senator George. And welcome up Senator Bates and Representative Buckley. Steve Meyer.
Mr. Chair and members, House Bill 2641, Ian Gross, deals with the local option property taxes for school districts. Currently, there's a limitation of $750 or $1,000 per weighted student, whichever is the smaller, $750 or 15% of formula revenue, whichever is the lower, that can be raised as a local option before the revenue starts getting included in the school equalization formula and doesn't really have a benefit for the district. The bill proposes raising the $750 per student amount to $1,000 per weighted student and the 15% to 20%. So this then would allow districts to go to the voters and seek approval for higher amounts of local option property taxes.
Senator Bates, Representative Buckley.
Good morning. For the record, Representative Peter Buckley, South Jackson County. Mr. Chair, members, thank you so much for your time and consideration of this bill today. We're bringing this bill forward on behalf of the Ashland School District, but it also does impact school districts throughout the state. They're faced with the situation that we have with a severe decline in enrollment. The local option's been used by school districts to ask the voters of their communities if they would like to add to the funding of their schools for a variety of different reasons. In our case, with losing approximately 100 students per year and projected to be continue to lose 100 students per year for the next several years, our district would love to be able to go back. Our voters have consistently responded positively to requests for additional funding for programs. By increasing the caps on the local option as it currently stands, we'll be able to go to the voters of our district and ask them if they'll be able to pass a local option that can continue services at their current level, even though we are going to be losing those 100 students a year. It comes down to that as kind of on-the-ground fact for us. What this bill would do is would raise the cap from 15 to 20% or the $750 per average daily membership to $1,000. In an interesting kind of dynamic here, given the way that we're going to structure our proposal in Ashland for this local option, we're going to actually ask voters for less per taxpayer, but we're going to be able to actually bring in more money to actually meet the services, given the change from a local option that we've done through the city to now actually doing the local option through the school district. So I would greatly appreciate your consideration of the bill. I turn it over to Senator Bates and answer any questions you might have.
Questions for Representative Buckley? Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Alan Bates. I'm a state senator from District 3, Medford and Ashland. I'll declare a conflict of interest here in that I live just outside the city of Ashland. My kids go to school there, and if this passes and we go to our levy, as I hope we do, I'll be paying more taxes, not less taxes. Okay, but it's a good thing to do anyway. We have a school formula in this state that we use, and it's a good one. It's complex and has to be because we have such divergent types of school districts, some going up in population, some going down, some staying the same. In my particular district, I have two that are growing rapidly. One's about level and one's going down. When you look at the impact of our basic formula for those schools, you'll find that there are some very special difficulties that occur. If you have a declining enrollment, even though it's a general declining enrollment, one which we expect to flatten out as we expect to see it in Ashland, you have a difficulty under this formula of maintaining your programs. If you're an incredibly fast-growing program, you have a difficulty there also because expanding that fast, the formula doesn't fit your needs very well. Having said that, I think this local option brings something to all school districts. It allows a local school district to make a decision, and a decision with their taxpayers, if they want to put more money into their schools because they're rapidly growing or they're rapidly going down in size. And I think it's a good way to deal with the formula. I do not want the formula changed. That's like starting a land war in Asia. We don't really want to do that, folks. The overall formula works reasonably well, but this gives us an opportunity to work on the margins of that and to make it really work for our local school districts. I think this is a great bill. I thank Representative Buckley for bringing it forward. I think a modest increase in the local option is something that we need for districts that are growing fast or those that are slowly declining. And I think it's something that will serve the kids of this state very, very well. And it's a local issue. If local people decide to pass this levy, so be it. If they don't, I understand. But it's not something we're imposing on anybody. We're just allowing an option. We're giving an option to local communities to make a decision about their schools, something that we've, to a great degree, taken away with from them with ballot measure 5. So this is, I think, a great step forward.
Great. Senator George.
Colleagues, in 1999, when we passed this legislation, there was a bunch of us that were concerned. We'll go along with this, but we're really concerned about the school equalization and the fact that the haves will have more and the have-nots will be left with, an empty bucket or diminished in comparison to those who have. What about that? I mean, this really concerns me, and that's this issue of the school equalization, because I can see a time in which we're going to get out of balance and somebody's going to sue again.
May I respond to that, Mr. Chair? I was for 10 years on a school board, one of the have-nots, mm-hmm. and Eagle Point. And when the equalization came in and the reforma came in, we really started putting better programs together for our kids, and we did better. I believe that the basic formula we have, and that's why I don't want to go there, the basic formula we have resolves that issue, I think, on a fairly permanent basis. We're talking about on the margins here for districts going up and going down. And for the vast majority of schools, if we stick to our formula, the one I mentioned earlier, that resolves that problem ever happening again. We had a situation in those days, and you well knew them, where there would be a situation where, depending what you raised in your local district, and that money then was matched by the state, the rich got richer, and the poor got poorer. We had districts getting $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 per student. Others, because they couldn't raise their local money, really getting hammered because they didn't get any general fund money except what they put up to match. So it was a match program. The richer districts got richer. The poor districts got poorer. We don't have that formula anymore. The formula we have now is general fund money going out on an average daily attendance and what those type of students are. We have adjustments for different special needs kids. So with that in place, I don't see this happening again. This is working the margins for special situations that I think can really help schools. And frankly, the two districts I'm talking about, Eagle Point still being a low-income area, comparatively speaking, and Ashland being a high-income area, they could both end up using this if they chose to.
Senator Starr.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing this bill forward. I mean, this is, school funding is just a tough nut. I mean, it is just not easy. And, this is an area where it's changed since I've been in this process. The formula came in before I was a legislator, but I was here in 99 and supported the work that we did then. I supported, I think it was Senator Devlin, that worked in 2003 to increase the numbers from 500 to 750. We're talking about another increase here. I think I share the Senator for Newburgh's concern about inequities. We have a lot of districts that, because of Measure 5 limits, have no ability to go out for a local option because there's just no gap in there. You have other districts that you just couldn't pass a tax no matter what. I mean, it's just not possible. And we're talking about an extra $1,000 per kid here. Obviously, this increases at $250 more per kid from current law. I'm very concerned about, we talked about haves and have-nots. We talked about, the overall funding formula. But I'm afraid that this continues to move us in a situation where we have those inequities in school funding. And I don't know if you can add anything to your comment to Senator George, but this is one that's gotten me a little bit troubled.
Mr. Chair and Senator Starr, frankly, that's, having spent 10 years in a district that was a have-not district, I understand your feelings. All my kids went through that district. I sent 6 kids through there and about 15 foster kids. We had a lot of kids in our place in the old farm, and we ran through that district, and they did a great job with them.
How many kids did you have? 21?
Be fruitful.
These are foster kids. These were not through the state. We picked up kids that were going from couch to couch.
Kind of a hobby for the state.
Yeah, and these kids were 15, 16 years old. They didn't have a place to live, and so we had a big farm, and they stayed with us for 2 or 3 years while they got through high school, so it wasn't a formal program. But having that experience, plus being on the school board there, I'm going to go back to what I said to Senator George. We I'll be kind in my language. We struggled with the old formula. We were very angry about it. We were in a situation where we couldn't get enough money up from our community because we were a low-income community to match the funds coming from the state. And as a result, we kept going down and down and down, while the districts that could match that money kept going up and up and up. That doesn't happen anymore. One of the things about, as much as I have questions about ballot measure 5 and what it's done, one of the things it did do was stop that equity and inequity from happening. Made a huge difference to Eagle Point School District. We saw our budgets for the first time going up and up and up, and we started putting in programs that other places took for granted. Sports programs or some of the classes we were offering, we didn't have any enriched programs. Those all came in as a result of that and are still there. Those will not be lost. I don't think we'll ever have to go back to this inequity problem again. But this is just one little tool that on the edges can make a difference. I don't think you're going to see many places passing $1,000 per student. I just think that's too expensive, even for areas that have great property wealth. But it does offer something for those districts. I could even see it now working in Eagle Point, where we've had a huge expansion of students, much faster than we expected. And so I think this is a marginal thing. As long as you don't play around with that basic formula, you play with that, you might get back into the inequity problem again. As long as we leave that in place, I feel comfortable we're safe with this.
If I can respond very quickly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Starr, again, it is marginal, as Senator Bates says, but the margin is increasingly important. Our graduating high school class this week has 267 students. Our incoming kindergarten class has 120. So that's the kind of variation we're looking at. And again, it's tempered by what we can actually ask the voters to fund, what they'll be willing to spend in order to maintain services. But this really would allow us to maintain services for the next generation, which is really what we're determined to do.
Thank you. Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Would it be possible to see if from the staff we can get kind of where districts are as far as their ability to go out for local option and where they are with the Measure 5 limits and
who's done it, who hasn't done it?
I don't know how difficult it would be to find those numbers.
Mr. Chair, committee, I have numbers on districts who have asked voters, have gone to the voters, asked for approval, either approved or not approved. I can share that with you. How much they would be potentially capable of raising at various tax rates, I don't have.
Is that information possible to get?
It has to be done on a property-by-property basis, so it's pretty involved.
Okay.
But you do have, I've seen a couple sheets that at least give the macro sense.
I can hand this out if you like.
Sure.
More information, the better. We'll get a copy to Senator Bates and Representative Buckley. Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I'm interested in that data compared to the property evaluation per pupil, which is the way to measure the wealth of a district. I happen to represent David Douglas, served 10 years on the David Douglas School Board. It's the second poorest district in the state in property evaluation per pupil. A lot of people aren't aware of that. Makes it very, very difficult for them to pass any kind of a bond. I'm fearful, along with Senator George, that we're giving the wealthier districts a tool that the poorer districts don't have access to. And so I need that additional information. I'm not saying I'm going to oppose this bill, but I'm not ready to move on it today.
Other questions for... Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we look forward to coming back to you during a work session, answering those questions or getting back to you as quickly as we can those questions. And as if I've heard properly, Mr. Chair, the question is, are we building something into law that would build an inequity between districts of a significant nature?
That seems to be the concern of a couple of our members. Give you the chance to maybe have... We don't have lunch plans today.
We used to, but we don't now.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, I did ask Legislative Council if the change of the option caps would have any sort of impact to our constitutional requirement for equity, and Legislative Council did respond that no, this does not bump up against the constitutional
equity problem from the. Yeah. When was that lawsuit, Steve? When was the equity lawsuit? Early 90s.
It was the early, I think it was in the early 90s. I still, if I may speak, sir. It was in the early 90s, and I believe it was primarily about a district out in the Savi Island or up north here, and you know, many of us joined that lawsuit because the inequity at that time was unbelievable. It was some districts were receiving twice the amount of general fund money as others, and the poorest districts were getting the least, and it was a real problem. Yeah. So I just don't think this leads us back there, but we will get information back to you to make sure we're on solid ground.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Buckley, Representative Buckley, if you could provide a copy of that legislative LC letter, I think that would be terrific to have in the file as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Senator George.
I'd love to thank Senator Bates for the only positive comment I've ever heard in this building about Measure 5.
That was one thing it did.
Then there's two of us that can find positive.
Well, I'll tell you, we looked at what property tax rates would have been absent Measure 5 and 47. This was about, a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And they would have been astronomically high. So I think all of us recognize that.
People would have been losing their homes.
Yeah.
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 I'll send regards to Don.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association, here to speak in favor of House Bill 2641. And I don't have a lot to say. A couple things to add. I actually this bill was flagged for me just on this very Monday by a representative from the Eugene School District who believes that they'll be up against this statutory cap within a year of the implementation of their local option levy as well. I do want to go right at the issue of equalization somewhat here to point out a couple things to bear in mind, and that is, of course, that all of the money that we're talking about, however small it may be, is all within the Measure 5 limitation, the $5 per thousand of the education portion. This does not in any way, because, of course, constitutionally we could not go outside of that amount. It merely allows districts who are not currently bringing additional dollars into the system to bring what really could be classified as some marginal dollars within that. I do want to sort of refute the notion that this is a slippery slope towards inequity, because there's sort of the hard stop on that slope, if you will, of Measure 5 that sort of bars any further erosion of that question. The other, and this is more of just something to chew on when we think about equalization, of course, equalization is always sort of in how you count it. There's been a lot of discussion over the last couple of years. Equalization, as the courts have said that Oregon is okay with, is that we are equalized on a dollars per student basis, sort of a financial equalization. But I would also argue on behalf of a lot of districts out there that there is a programmatic inequity that exists in our districts, particularly among small, remote, declining enrollment districts who don't benefit from a per-student basis that we fund schools. They're not adding money every year to their program to be able to buy additional services. Obviously, in a programmatic or in a financial equity per student, it creates perhaps other inequities for growing districts when it comes to certain capital needs that they face as well. So sort of the notion of equity is kind of an amoebous notion, depending on how you look at it in the system. I think that 2641 on its face, really, because it is a small amount of money for sort of limited amounts of districts that do get that voter authority, really does not even begin to separate us from the notion of statewide equity.
Well put, Senator George. Quickly,
but I am still concerned. I mean, you can say, well, we're not counting these numbers, you know, the local option in the equity issue. But by golly, if I go to court and I think it's unfair, I'm going to sue on the basis of total. The reason we passed this thing was that we felt, well, okay, there is a reasonable level, mm-hmm. and I'm worried about getting outside of reasonable and having everybody back in court talking about whether this is equal or not.
Certainly. I think that what you're seeing as districts approach the $750 cap is, of course, that a $750 number is a stagnant number, that your dollar gets cheaper every year we advance in the economy, and that $1, that $750, is not worth what it was when we first implemented that, and you're beginning to see districts hit up against that cap. So it is that notion. I think because it's still, we're talking about a still relatively, you know, in the expanse of a $8 or $9 billion general fund and property tax enterprise, we're talking about a real smattering of dollars into the system for districts that really are right up against that cap, but do still have an ability to bring additional revenue into the system within their Measure 5 limitation.
Sir.
Well, when you put it in this sphere of all the money that's spent on K-12, including general fund and property taxes, of course, we're talking peanuts. But when you're talking about a district,
mm-hmm.
and you're talking about up to 20% of additional revenue, that's a lot of dough. Or the $1,000, I mean, what are we going to spend per kid in this upcoming biennium? $6,000 per kid? So you add another $1,000. I mean, that's a lot of dough for, you know, a district. Yeah, of course, in the big pie, $8 or $9 billion, it's peanuts. But on a district-by-district basis, that's a lot of money. And so I think that that I think that we should tread very cautiously here. I'm, as I said to Senator Bates and Representative, I think that this is something we got to be very careful about.
I totally agree with the comments. I think that what you see from Representative Bates and Buckley is the impact that it would have on an individual district, and that it actually is meaningful to that district. But when you look at the aggregate system, it doesn't have a substantial detriment to others. The one piece I will add, for my association, we had extensive conversation among our legislative policy committee that develops our policies and priorities, and we have had a long-standing platform of supporting equalization and supporting the formula. For the first time this last interim, they added a plank in our legislative policies directing us to advocate for barring sort of statewide adequacy, which, while we think that the legislature is poised to make a fairly substantial investment in K-12 education, it's not really to full adequate levels to fund all the program we think students deserve, barring that full level, that we are here to advocate for additional revenues for districts, even if it's sometimes on a district-by-district basis. There was a bill earlier in the session in the House Revenue Committee that would have granted broader taxing authority to districts to go out and raise local taxes. For instance, Coos Bay School District has looked into trying to do some sort of taxing district locally to do a sort of hotel-motel tax. Obviously, isolated tax would attack that equity notion. But our committee came down to the belief that in a system where there are the have-nots and the have-nots, that if a district has an ability to raise some level of additional revenue, we should not hold them back.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else? 2641. Public hearing on 2641. Okay, so we have Senator Monroe for a few more minutes. Let's try to move the two bills that we've got. Open a work session on House Bill 3482. Paul, you have that bill. Kate Richardson, do you want to come up and be available? She is available. She's closer to the microphone if we have any questions for the Treasurer's
Mr.
Office.
Chair.
Senator Starr.
Would you entertain the A2 amendment to the bill?
I'm not ecstatic about them, but would be willing to put them in the bill if you feel strongly about it.
I do.
So do you want to talk about your A2s?
Mr. Chair, the A2 amendments reinstate the political party parity in OPA. We had testimony that it doesn't make a difference. I just think that we have a lot of war going into this state, and I think that having varying philosophical points of view on this particular board makes sense. And so the A2 basically reinstate the political party parity in the bill, so you have a mix of potentially Republicans and Democrats and independents represented on this particular board.
Any questions for Senator Starr just on the A2s? And Treasurer's Office, if you have any feeling on those, and we'd like to hear them. Senator George.
Mr. Chairman, at first I didn't have a problem with it. The more I thought about it, the more I thought there is nothing wrong with diversity. It's a very good thing. And so then I started to come back. I wasn't aware of the -2 amendments, but I would support that.
Okay. Do you guys...
For the record, Kate Richardson, Chief of Staff for the State Treasurer. I think actually, Senator Deckert, your feelings would be expressed to Treasurer's. Not ecstatic about them, but we wouldn't oppose them.
Awesome. Senator Monroe?
I don't like it, but I will still support the bill, even if the majority of the committee decides to amend it.
Mr. Chair, I move the A2 amendments to House Bill 3482.
Senator Starr has moved the -A2 amendments to House Bill 3482. Discussion. Objections to that motion?
Object.
Senator Monroe objects. The motion passes. Senator Starr.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 3482 as amended to the floor with due pass.
Mr. Chair, we do have another amendment, an A3 amendment. which is a technical amendment that was requested by Treasury.
Oh, yeah. Come, I didn't know about this takes out the political parties, that technicality.
Mr. Trump, smooth but not that smooth. actually, this, on the on an amendment in the House side, there was inadvertently taken out a phrase on page 2 in the definition of institution, and that would have been in line 20 within the state. We had requested that in the way Legislative Council drafted it. It came out. If the bill was going to be amended, we wanted to reinsert that, although we do think that check and balance was already there. The amendment also put in within the state and a couple of other definitions, which I didn't anticipate, but I would not object to. So if we're going to amend the bill, we'd like to put that back in as well.
The A3s, just for questions for Ms. Richardson on the A3s.
Move the A3s.
Senator Starr, do we need to withdraw his motion? Did you move the bill?
I had a... I withdraw the motion to move the bill to the Senate floor.
Senator Starr has withdrawn his motion to move House Bill 3482, and Senator Monroe has moved the A3s. Discussion. Objections. So ordered.
Move the bill.
Senator Monroe has moved House Bill 3482 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion. Objections. So ordered. Senator Starr will carry that bill.
Sure.
Open a work session on House Bill 2094. Well, I think this one's ready to go. I'm not aware of.
Chris sends it, but yes.
Any amendments?
There is a small amendment.
There is a small amendment. Mr. Chairman, for the committee, it's the Dash A4 amendments. They're clean now. They just put a sunset on the credit of January 1, 2012.
Oh, that's right.
We in work session?
We are in work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the A4 amendments.
Senator Monroe has moved the Dash A4 amendments to House Bill 2094. Discussion. Objections. So ordered. Senator
Mr. Chair,
Monroe.
Move the bill.
Senator Monroe's moved.
As amended.
Moved House Bill 2094 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation. Discussion. Objections. So ordered. Thanks, Senator Monroe. Senator Monroe will carry that bill.
Okay.
And last bill, we are going to recess Senator Monroe till 2:30. We have the cigarette tax healthy kids package that this committee will have at 2:30 today.
Okay.
You bet. Thank you, Housing Department. Last bill is the fish passage. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2294.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the House Bill 2294B makes some modifications to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Fish Screening Cost Share Program. It modifies the fish screening goal from 75 water diversions per year to 150 diversions or 150 cubic feet per second of water per biennium. It allows the water diversions of any size. It clarifies that the credit may be granted to all water users installing fish screening devices that meet the state requirements, and it eliminates the dollar expenditure limits but maintains the percentage limits part of the cost share program, and there's some language cleanup that consolidates some of the statute and deletes redundant statutes, and it sunsets the credit as of January 2nd, 2014.
Right.
Hello, Chair Deckard, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roy Elliker. I'm the Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. On my right, Mr. Steve Williams, Assistant Administrator for Fish Division. Mr. Chair, it's not often like that the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife brings to you a bill that passed the House 55-0. So I think Mr. Alnack has done a good job summing the bill up. We've worked hard in the interim and earlier in the session with all the fishing, water, and agricultural groups to make sure the bill was a good one. And I recommend it to the committee and would sure like it if you could pass this out today.
Great. People never just say how much they'd like it if we passed their bill out right now. Maybe that's the golden touch. Anything to add? anyone have questions on this? Seems like
a great deal.
A great deal.
Mr. Chair, George. As a former irrigator, I've always seen the need for this because back in the old days, it was mainly carp we were dealing with, but boy, you saw a lot of dead fish many times, and we always wondered back then, was there a way to screen it to keep them from getting into a position where they're not going to survive?
Yeah, yeah. Great. Thank you. Really appreciate the brevity and bringing this to us. It seems like a really good bill. Close public hearing on House Bill 2294. Open work session on House Bill 2294.
Do we have amendments?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that. Move House Bill 2294 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator George has moved House Bill 2294 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Objections. So ordered. Sir George, would you like to tell that
the story to
the Senate floor? I think a lot of us have at least witnessed something like that and thought there's got to be something better that we could do. We will stand in recess, so at 2:30 is the plan to get the constitutional package, and we were trying to get Senate Bill 754 up, which is a tax credit for social workers. And we are now getting the signature on that. So recess until 2:30 in hearing room A, we think.